produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. This is your daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Daily Audio Stash is where responsible marijuana smokers listen in on the latest news about cannabis, hear the voices of the marijuana law reform movement in special segments and interviews, and kick back with comedy and music no other podcast can offer. It's Normal's Daily Audio Stash. More information at normalaudiostash.com.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson from Normal. For 30 years, Normal has provided a voice for the millions of Americans who smoke marijuana responsibly. More than 500,000 Americans are arrested each year for smoking pot. These are ordinary citizens like you and me whose lives and careers are being needlessly destroyed. To learn how you can help, contact Normal at www.norml.org or call toll-free at 888-67-NORML.
First up today, it's news from Normal. Our news today. Ohio State Senate holds hearing on medical marijuana. Ohio is taking its first step this week towards allowing its citizens access to medical marijuana. The Ohio Medical Marijuana Bill, SB 74, is sponsored by State Senator Bob Hagan, and its purpose is to amend and enact new sections of the revised code to, quote, regulate the medical use of marijuana, close quote. The bill is scheduled to receive a perfunctory hearing in accordance with Senate rules tomorrow. This hearing will be limited to the sponsor's testimony only. Two committee members hearing the testimony tomorrow will not be returning to the regular session of the Ohio State Senate. Chair Jim Jordan was elected to the U.S. Congress, and ranking minority member Mark Dan was elected Ohio Attorney General. Under the proposed legislation, doctors can recommend patients to use medical marijuana if they have debilitating medical conditions. Some of the conditions defined in the bill are cancer, glaucoma, positive status for HIV or AIDS, and the treatment of the following conditions: cachexia or wasting syndrome, severe or chronic pain, severe or chronic nausea, seizures including those characteristic of epilepsy, severe and persistent muscle spasms, including those characteristic of multiple sclerosis or Crohn's disease. Patients or designated caregivers over the age of 18 would be authorized to possess, cultivate, and transport medical marijuana. The bill describes a, quote, adequate supply, close quote, definition for patients, stating that no more than 1,000 grams of dried usable marijuana and no more than 1,000 grams of marijuana in live plant form can be possessed at any time. Simple possession of small amounts of marijuana has already largely been decriminalized in Ohio, with possession of less than 100 grams being a non-criminal offense with a $100 fine. However, steep fines remain for the cultivation and transport, as well as for possession or sale of, quote, paraphernalia, close quote. SB 74 would protect those patients with a doctor's recommendation and their designated caregivers from those penalties and arrest. Joining us today to discuss the news of Ohio's SB 74 is Ed Orlette, who represents the Drug Policy Alliance in Ohio. Ed is a former state legislator who was instrumental in the passage of Ohio's marijuana decriminalization, making the possession of less than 100 grams of cannabis a non-criminal offense with a fine of $100. Ed, welcome to the Audio Stash today.
Thanks.
Great to hear from you today, Ed. Ed, why is medical marijuana such an important issue in Ohio?
Well, there are a number of patients that already use marijuana for various problems: pain, nausea, appetite loss from HIV and other things. And indications are that, for example, the recent study on Alzheimer's, that marijuana may play a key effect in that. So if they would just at least begin some research or permit some research in this state, I think we could reach a far more objective and balanced viewpoint on the question, and I think we at the least could develop a pilot program for trying it. We've done that on other types of medicinal needs, and it seems to me there should be no reason anyone would be afraid of trying at least a pilot program on medical marijuana to gain experience on what it actually does. There's very little research, actually, on the salutary effects that can come from using marijuana for any number of illnesses.
This bill introduces the concept of patients and their designated caregivers cultivating their supply. Is this the best way for patients to have access to medical marijuana?
For them to buy it from former Senator Eastland's farm down in Mississippi, like they did for a while and maybe still do, to produce marijuana cigarettes for glaucoma patients. The idea of self-cultivation is a little more difficult to sell. There's no reason why that some government agency couldn't do the growing and make it available to those people that their doctors have recommended it. But and if that works, then there further should be no reason for providing a permit or something that would permit people to grow their own, as long as it was in very limited amounts for their personal use.
Ed, you helped decriminalize possession of less than 100 grams of marijuana in Ohio. That's been in place for 26 years. Has that decriminalization had a positive effect on attitudes towards medical marijuana there?
Absolutely, and even if our conservative friends would look more closely at that, I've forgotten the numbers of the thousands of people that under the old law, if we hadn't made the change, would have gone to prison, would have cost taxpayers a tremendous amount of money. We would have needed more criminal institutions than we have now. So if they would just review how effective that has been, the lack of any problems that it created, I think it certainly adds to the impetus for at least giving a shot to medical marijuana.
And while possession of cannabis is a non-criminal offense, there remain steep penalties for the possession of paraphernalia. Is there something that can be done to protect patients who need marijuana delivery system?
I think that is something, there should be some exception made if we're going to try the medical marijuana, that as long as the paraphernalia is used for that purpose, that there would not be a penalty. I mean, sure, some people could put their marijuana in brownies, but we know that's not as effective, and they wouldn't need paraphernalia unless you consider a brownie pan paraphernalia. I don't know. I suppose some people would. But in any event, I think that some relief in that area would go hand in hand with the actual establishment of some kind of pilot program for the use of medical marijuana.
Ed, you mentioned earlier that getting research on medical marijuana is becoming just so vital to patients. And because Ohio has so many large academic and research institutions there, is that why it's so important to have medical marijuana in Ohio so that research can take place?
There's any number of our higher education facilities, Ohio State, Cleveland State, any number of them that would have the resources and capability with a small grant to do this. And it seems to me, and this is something, if we ever get a change in Washington, that there may even be federal grants to do this. So I would hope that that, again, along with the medical marijuana legislation, that there would be some provision for research, for ongoing monitoring of those people who are using medical marijuana, so that we do get a very complete picture of its effects, good or bad. But right now, with the total ban, it's hard to objectively evaluate it. The opponents simply keep harking up all these draconian things that it fries people's brains, and oh God, it's terrible. But if they just permit some objective research in our institutions of higher learning, I think that's going to provide a much clearer picture of what medical marijuana can actually do or not do.
Ed, I want to thank you again for joining us here today, and I very much look forward to speaking with you again here on the Audio Stack.
Thank you very much.
Ed Orlett represents the Drug Policy Alliance in Ohio. Ed is a former state legislator who was instrumental in the passage of Ohio's marijuana decriminalization. Also joining us today to discuss the news of the Ohio Medical Marijuana Bill, SB 74, is the president and director of the Ohio Patient Action Network, Brandy Zink. We have links to OPN at normalaudiostash.com. Brandy, welcome to the Audio Stash today.
Thank you very much.
We're discussing the perfunctory hearing tomorrow for Ohio's SB 74. The bill's sponsor will be heard by a committee that includes two individuals who were elected into higher-level positions in 2007. One's going to the U.S. Congress, the other was elected Ohio Attorney General. It's interesting that they will be the individual who will hear this testimony tomorrow.
I think it's very important for anyone who is going to be serving on a federal level to hear testimony regarding medical marijuana. But I also think it's important for the entire state of Ohio and the legislature to hear the stories of patients and the testimony of doctors and other experts on medical marijuana.
And Brandy, do you think that Ohio's legislators are open to the concept of medical marijuana?
I think that legislators are generally compassionate people, and this is about medicine and having safe access to safe medicine. Putting patients at risk for arrest is not the way that we need to handle our health care in Ohio, and I do think that the Ohio legislature is becoming more open to understanding that medical marijuana is more about doctors being able to treat patients. And I think that if they're able to have a second hearing where we have patient testimony and the testimony of doctors, they'll be able to learn that themselves.
Also, Brandy, SB 74 calls for self-cultivation. Does this work well for patients?
Well, each patient's scenario will be different. There are many patients that are too seriously ill to be able to care for themselves, so having a caregiver provide their medicine for them is one way. In Ohio right now, we do not have any provisions for patients to have safe access to their medicine. And I think that for many patients, it's important for them to be able to control their medicine and be able to grow their own or have a caregiver give them their medicine, where they know it's safe, it's organic, nothing's been altered, it doesn't come from the black market, and it doesn't put patients at further risk when they have to deal with a criminal element.
Many patients I've spoken with note that different strains of marijuana have better positive impacts on their condition. Does self-cultivation also help patients get just the right marijuana for their needs?
Well, I would certainly think so. I think patients have, through the test of time, they've learned what works for them and what doesn't work for them. And I think that if Ohio is able to pass this legislation, patients will be able to work with their doctors in order to find the medication that's right for them.
Brandy, I want to thank you for joining us here today on the Audio Stash to discuss Ohio's SB 74.
Thank you very much, and I would like to invite people to learn more about the Ohio Patient Network and what we do. Please visit www.ohiopatient.net.
Brandy Zink is the president and director of the Ohio Patients Action Network, a group comprised exclusively of medical marijuana patients.
If I were to tell you that in America, right now, over 1 million children sell marijuana, what would you think? Would you think that any public policy that creates over 1 million teenage marijuana dealers needs to be reexamined and possibly amended? You would not be alone. The members of the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, a.k.a. NORMAL, have been working since 1970 to reform marijuana laws such that responsible adults, not children, sell and use marijuana. Isn't it high time to reform America's misguided marijuana laws? This is Alan St. Pierre, Executive Director of NORMAL in Washington, D.C. Only concerned citizens can effectively end the federal government's nearly 70-year-old prohibition on responsible adult marijuana sales and use. Want to know more about how you can help? Contact us at NORMAL, toll-free, 888-67-NORMAL, or by visiting the organization's popular and informative webpage at normal, N-O-R-M-L.org.
Welcome back to the Audio Stash today. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Take a moment to join us at Normal to end marijuana prohibition in America. Just visit NORML.org. First up in the program today, we'll hear from the Director of Students for Sensible Drug Policy, Chris Crane. Their conference is coming up this Friday at Georgetown University in Washington, D.C. You can link up to the conference right through our website at normalaudiostash.com. Joining us today via phone from Washington, D.C. is Chris Crane, the Director for Students for Sensible Drug Policy. SSDP is one of the most active groups seeking a change to drug laws and drug enforcement in this country and in others. On Friday, the SSDP conference gets underway, and Chris joins us today to talk about the activities and speakers. Chris, welcome back to the Audio Stash today.
Thanks for having me back.
Great to speak with you today, Chris. I know this is a very important week with the SSDP conference beginning Friday at Georgetown University. First, tell us how many will be in attendance at the conference.
Well, it's looking like this is going to be by far the largest SSDP conference that we've had in 8 years. We're expecting over 300 people altogether. Probably about 250 of those will be college students from all across the United States and Canada.
I know SSDP has an international presence. Are some of these international students going to be there?
There are. There's going to be, I believe, about 8 schools represented from Canada. And there have been a couple of people that have expressed interest in coming from Russia, although I'm not sure if they're going to make it or not.
Chris, tell us what the students and other attendees will experience during the conference this weekend.
Well, we're going to have 3 very distinct days for the attendees of this conference. Friday is going to be Congressional Lobby Day, where we're going to spend the morning training the students and other activists on the do's and don'ts of lobbying and getting them up to speed on the issues that are important to young people when it comes to the war on drugs, issues like the law that denies financial aid to students with drug convictions, the issue of student drug testing, random suspicionless drug testing in public schools, and defunding the Office of National Drug Control Policy's youth anti-drug media campaign. So we're going to be training everybody in the morning, and then in the afternoon they're going to spend all afternoon on Capitol Hill meeting with their members of Congress, their senators and representatives, lobbying on behalf of these issues. Saturday is going to be a day of drug war education, where conference attendees will hear from virtually all of the experts in drug policy reform and harm reduction. And they'll hear about issues like efforts to reform the nation's marijuana laws, race and the war on drugs, the fight to repeal the HEA aid elimination penalty that denies financial aid to students with drug convictions, hear about international drug policy, efforts to reform policy through litigation, a whole host of other issues surrounding the war on drugs. Sunday is going to be a day of activist skills training, where students will learn skills that they can take back to their campuses in order to become better advocates for reform both on their campuses and in their communities. And these will include workshops on effective leadership transition, forming coalitions on campus, media training, direct action training, festivals, putting on festivals, fundraising tactics, and those kind of workshops that will allow our activists, students and non-students, to become better advocates for reform.
Chris, I know you've been involved with congressional lobbying for quite some time there in D.C., but for students participating in the Lobby Day Friday, what's that experience like for folks who are doing it for the first time?
I think it's a tremendously empowering experience, particularly for a student who's never lobbied before, and that's really one of the benefits of us having a lobby day while we're having a conference here in Washington, D.C. I think for most young people, and I think most people in general who've never lobbied before, they tend to think of going to Congress as a particularly daunting experience, something that's got to be difficult, that these members and their staff won't want to hear their concerns, won't care about their concerns, when the reality is it's actually quite simple to go to your representative or your senator's office to meet with a legislative staffer, if not the member themselves, and to have them listen to your concerns. People tend to forget that members of Congress work for them. They're elected by their constituents, and they are obliged to listen to their constituents when they want to voice their opinions. So we try to make the process as easy as possible for the attendees of this conference by booking appointments with their representatives in advance of the conference, so that when they show up, we train them on the basics, we train them on the issues, and we send them to meet with their members of Congress. And I think one of the big advantages of this is that if a student comes to Washington, D.C. and gets access in their member of Congress's office, and they see just how easy it is to lobby in Congress and how much they're actually taken seriously, it's really not going to be intimidating at all when they then go back to their campuses and want to lobby their student government or their school administration or even their city council.
And Chris, who are some of the speakers delivering talks on the topics you mentioned earlier?
Well, probably our most notable speakers will be during our luncheon plenary on Saturday. That's a plenary session called Watchdogs or Lapdogs, Media Coverage of the War on Drugs, and it's going to be a discussion about the way the media covers the war on drugs and covers reform efforts. That discussion is going to be had by Clarence Page, who is an editorial board member of the Chicago Tribune, and he frequently appears on the McLaughlin Group, as well as the Chris Matthews Show, the Sunday morning political talk show. And he's going to be joined by Bill Press. Bill Press is a contributor to MSNBC, the former host of Buchanan and Press on MSNBC, and he was also the former host of Crossfire, as well as a spin room on CNN.
You mentioned a talk on race and the drug war. Who will be involved with that?
The race and the drug war panel is going to be led by Matthew Fogg. He's a former DEA agent and a current speaker for Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. He'll be joined by Naomi Long of the Drug Policy Alliance office here in Washington, D.C., as well as Alberto Mendoza of the Drug Policy Alliance office in Southern California. And that panel is going to be moderated by Jennifer Janicek, who is a member of the SSDP Board of Directors and also runs our Roosevelt University chapter, and she recently co-authored a report that received massive coverage in Illinois about the racial breakdown of incarceration, of drug incarcerations in Illinois.
Chris, is that racial break in drug prosecution something that is particularly affecting students and young people right now?
I think so. If you look at the breakdown of arrest data and conviction data and incarceration data, it's clear that there's a disproportionate number of African Americans and other communities of color that are being arrested, convicted, and incarcerated. In fact, that number gets higher and higher. The proportion gets higher and higher to the point where, if you look at the number of people incarcerated for drug offenses in this country, full 63% of those are African American, whereas African Americans make up only 13% of drug users in this country, which is directly proportionate to their population. And I think this is something that a lot of young people, particularly young people who are interested in criminal justice or social justice issues, tend to care deeply about. A lot of young people really see that our drug laws have really become sort of the new Jim Crow in this country. They become a way of punishing minority communities, particularly African American communities, disproportionately to the way that that white communities are punished, or that drug laws are enforced in white communities.
And for those listening to the audio stash today, there are still some openings at the SSDP conference. Is that correct, Chris?
That's correct. We still have spaces available. People can register for the conference online. They can go to schoolsnotprisons.com. We have a huge banner right up on the front page of our website for the conference. They can click on that link, and people can still register. As I said, the majority of the attendees will be students, but this is not a student-only conference, and anybody who's interested in drug policy reform is more than welcome to join us. And, you know, they'll be hearing from people notable speakers like Bill Press and Clarence Page, Ryan Grimm of the Capital Leader will be moderating that panel. They can also hear from Alan St. Pierre of Normal, Ethan Nadelman of the Drug Policy Alliance, Steph Shear of Americans for Safe Access, Rob Campia of the Marijuana Policy Project, Kevin Zeese, the Common Sense for Drug Policy, who's going to be fresh off of the campaign trail running for Senate in Maryland, Cliff Thornton, who recently ran on the Green Party for Governor of Connecticut, leaders of organizations like SAFER and LEAP, major researchers in drug policy, such as P. Peter Reuter from the University of, University of Maryland, Mark Kleiman from UCLA, Graham Boyd from the ACLU Drug Law Reform Project, and others from that office will be there. So if there's anybody who's interested in getting more educated on the war on drugs and the impact that it has on young people and on Americans in general, I would encourage them to come and attend the conference. Anybody who's interested in this issue is more than welcome to be there.
Well, Chris, this conference sounds great. The Audio Stash will be there, and I thank you for joining us on the program today.
Thank you very much for having me on, and I look forward to seeing you at the conference.
I'll see you there, Chris. Chris Crane is the Director for Students for Sensible Drug Policy in Washington, D.C. Their conference starts Friday at Georgetown University, and you can find more information at schoolsnotprisons.com. Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Thanks to to podshow.com for all the great pod-safe music. We feature the band Carne Cruda as our theme. Make sure you visit our website at normalaudiostash.com. That's normalaudiostash.com for more information about every day's show. Thanks to Red Aphid Interactive Media for the podcasting technology. We're back at 4:20 tomorrow. If you listen to the Audio Stash, cast your vote at Podcast Alley or other podcast directory services. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Thanks for listening today. See you at 4:20 tomorrow. The podcasting technology of Normal is made possible by Red Aphid Interactive Media. More information at redaphid.com.